Hi, everybody. I'm Connie Willis. We are broadcasting live here on Coast to Coast AM from more than over 620 affiliates now in North America, and that's including Puerto Rico, Guam, and Canada. You just can't beat it. We are out there. And I am out of the iHeart Studios in Louisville, Kentucky from 840 WHAS. Well, we've got more to come here talking with Forrest Borey next year. We're going to continue that on Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, Forrest Borey, featured in The Nightmare, the documentary by Rodney Asher, who we will be speaking with later. Forrest Borey, a great name, by the way, in itself. Forrest, you are also an editor. What do you do, and what's your day job?
Oh, I'm a film and video editor, mostly, you know. Commercial stuff, you know, web content, you know, pretty dull.
Oh, dull no, stuff. No, you put together a story. You pull pieces of a puzzle together and create a story.
Fair enough.
Right? Yeah. Well, we've been talking to you about sleep paralysis, and right before I got off with you, I was talking about out-of-body experiences and astral projection, and a lot of people really, I mean, I've taken courses myself to try to do that so that I can fly, you know, through the skies and have all these neat adventures. However, sleep paralysis is nothing like that, and people, I've heard people try to compare the two, and what they say is with an out-of-body experience, you know, oh, you have control, you can go out of your body and come back, or with astral projection, you know, the same thing, even though there's differences there too. Where sleep paralysis, you're stuck, you're not in control. However, when you speak about rolling out of it, and some of the things that Rodney portrays in the film actually does sound a lot like when people have an out-of-body experience and astral projection, they describe hearing that electrical noise, and they describe sensations and sounds as well. So, but you yourself, you've not explored any of that?
No, not really. You know, my brain is kind of a little bit, I think, sometimes hardwired for a lot of this stuff. So I tend to be a little bit careful. Because I've just found when I'm kind of playing with fire, right?
Right. You've already got stuff going on. You don't need to adventure elsewhere, right?
Yeah, I don't need any bonus stuff. Yeah, I got enough on my plate.
Speaking of, how do you think Rodney portrayed you and what you described to him in the film?
I think he did a great job. I mean, I work in film, and you know, I do some directing too. I do, you know, a little bit of everything. So I know that you're going to take your own license. So I went into it knowing that he was going to take creative license and artistic license, and I actually was kind of excited to see what artistic license he was going to take, because it was like you said, you know, you can't quite describe the experience. It's just outside of your reach. So for somebody to make a visualization of it, it's never going to be completely wrong or completely right, because I mean, you can't even really fully describe it yourself. So I sort of knew that was going to be the case. That said, I think you did a great job of kind of, you know, creating the atmosphere of it, which is really hard to do, and the terror of it. You know, he kind of used some horror movie tropes to pull you into that space as a viewer, and I think that's great too, because it's, you know, if you just were to watch somebody in their bed not moving, you know, for 90 minutes, it'd be a pretty boring film, you know.
Here, so this person is, and they're terrified, and they're just laying.
Yeah, just like terrified. You know, it's not very.
This guy's full of it.
Yeah, so I think he did a great job. I remember I told him that the blue woman, you know, that story, that the thing he did, which is actually, I guess he had shot a scene with a woman all dressed in blue and all this other stuff and on green screen, and was, you know, had this effects house working on it. And he told me that nobody was, they just weren't getting it, and it just wasn't right. And so, and I wasn't privy to this, you know, I kind of stayed out of it in his whole process. It's his film, and I didn't want to try and be like, oh, what are you doing now? What's going on now? Everything.
He would be sorry he ever cast you at that point,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. And so he, but I guess he just late one night, he actually did that, made that whole scene himself on like, you know, using some of his graphic skills and special effects skills. And that, for me, from, you know, the recreation aspect was the most accurate of any of the scenes. So it's kind of interesting that he kind of went into it intuitively and kind of came out with the right answer.
Wow. What a nice thing to say. I'm sure he loves hearing that. That's excellent.
Yeah, he was a great person to work with.
Do you believe the fact that, I mean, why do you think that is the case? Because he's obviously had an experience before that he talks about in the film. So that's
gotta
help.
I think he can just look at it a little bit outside. You know, it's like he doesn't look for the conventional. You know, he's like one step beside the conventional. So I felt like he could kind of see what might actually be true, because he wasn't imposing a lot of kind of social constructs of what these demons and monsters and whatever should look like. He was kind of going with his own way, which is just a little to the side of that. And I think there was a lot of truth in that. Whereas if he had gone very conventional, it just would not have been accurate. But I think, you know, because he did go and was willing to take the risk to do something different, it is much more accurate.
And probably one of the reasons, I would say absolutely one of the reasons why people tout it as the scariest they've ever seen, whether it's this week, ever, this year, it's one of the top. I mean, I actually came across The Nightmare by during Halloween. A film documentarian guy on Facebook that I know, Michael McDonald up in Canada, he actually just sent out, here are the top five best Halloween documentaries to watch. And it was something like that. And I saw Nightmare. I was like, oh, interesting. What's that? You know, and it was like sleep process. Oh, I got to do that. And I, of course, you know, in a world of, you know, in TV and radio, you're supposed to get everything free. So I tried to get the bootleg one and it messed up my whole computer. I'm like, this is a nightmare, you know? So
that's what you get.
I know. Now Rodney knows the truth of that. So, wow, it is definitely is scary, like people say. And when you hear that, you're like, oh yeah, okay, is it? And he really did a great job with it, that's for sure. And it's great to hear when you're a part of the film and you feel the same way too, especially to describe something that is uncommon and then somebody can reenact it like they did. I want to ask you, you know about fear in a way of a paranormal way and a petrifying way, but you also know fear in a whole other way. And with your background, you're also working on your own documentary as well on what that other fear is. Is that correct?
Yeah. I'm trying anyway.
Wow. So just so everybody will know, I mean, here you have this, you know, terrifying fear, but then you also had a life-threatening fear. Tell us about that and tell us the differences of those fears.
Right. Well, So back in 2006, I was in Brooklyn, New York, and I was actually kidnapped for a couple hours by kind of a crazy guy. And I think he might have been high or drunk when he got me. And then he was just trying to, you know, get some money out of me. So he's toting me around some ATMs at gun and knife point. But he was kind of out of it. And so when he snapped it and snapped to it, you know, he'd been walking around with me, you know, for like 45 minutes plus. I knew all this stuff about him. He'd been just spilling the beans about his personal life, you know, and I knew what he looked like. So he didn't let go of me, even though I was out of money and I couldn't give him anything else. And instead he started leading me back to his neighborhood where I think he was intending to kill me. And so I had that sort of experience with him for a couple hours, walking back to his neighborhood and walking all around Brooklyn. And then tried to escape. I failed. was positive I was going to die then, but then he ended up letting me go because I did get him to like me in the end. So, yeah.
Now, okay, you were just walking and somebody grabbed you and put a gun to your back kind of thing?
Well, he was harassing me at first. You know, he was trying to get me to buy marijuana. And I, you know, I don't use drugs, A. B, if I did, I wouldn't buy them off a stranger man on the street. And C, it was just, he was being a creep about it. He was just following me and walking right beside me, and he would not leave me alone. I kept on trying to get rid of him. I gave him like $3 and I'll get on the train, man. But he just wouldn't get off me. But I was just marked, you know. He'd really decided that he was gonna try and mug me. So eventually, he kind of threw a fake fit about how if he didn't get rid of this weed, you know, quote unquote, they were gonna kill him. And so, you know, I had to help him. I just wanted the guy to get off my back. And then he kind of, I take my phone out to try and call him a cab. And while I am doing that, he kind of grabs my phone and walks off down a side street. Now I'm visiting Brooklyn at the time. I don't live there. So I need that phone. You know, I'm staying with friends. Or, you know, I got to get in touch with them. So I go down the side street to try and get my phone back. And it's while I'm trying to get it back that he grabs me and then flashes a knife and shows me the butt of the gun. Tucked in his waistband of his pants. Yeah.
So then he takes you around to ATMs to try to get money.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm a pacifist. You know, and he was a big guy. You know, I wasn't going to fight him, and I was also wearing these stupid boots that I couldn't run in. You know, these big clunky boots, so I couldn't run away from him. So I was kind of just stuck with the guy. So I was like, well, just, you know, it's just money. It's not a big deal. So, yeah, initially he was just taking me around to ATMs, but after the first ATM, I was out of money. But he had brought me to probably, I think, 6 or 7 more ATMs after that. And that experience was actually kind of similar. It wasn't the same, but it was similar to sleep paralysis. I remember being in that moment. He would also, every block or so, you know, throw me up against the wall and kind of describe all the horrible ways he was going to kill me or maim me or, you know, you know, permanently, you know, cause injury to my body. And I remember in that state really feeling that same kind of demonic, insane energy coming off him that I kind of knew from my childhood of being in sleep paralysis and other such instances. And the inability to escape was very similar as well. But the real fear, you know, because I've had all sorts of crazy stuff happen to me. I mean, I've told you maybe, you know, 0.5% of what I've gone through. But I got to say is that the after effects of an experience like that were far beat anything else that I'd ever experienced. That actual life-threatening fear. I'd take the paranormal over that any day of the week.
Really?
Tell you that much. Yeah.
You would take the paranormal over the guy with the gun any day of the week?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd live in a haunted house, sure.
Yeah, because you've always awakened. You've always, you've never been, you know, shot at, I guess, or anything like that. So at least you know you're going to wake up.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, you know, with the post-traumatic stress disorder, you never really wake up. It's almost like you're stuck in that same cycle over and over and over again. And it's up to you to try and figure out a way out. So I guess it is sort of similar to sleep paralysis. You kind of roll out of it eventually, you know, you figure out what kind of works and what kind of helps, like wiggling your big toe or whatever, you know, and then you just keep on doing it until you build the strength and then you can get out of it. And so, yeah, for me, it's, the next step is to kind of, I actually want to make a film about it and I have already started. I've shot a bunch of footage for it and I'm actually going to try and track this guy down and talk to him, kind of try and understand him, understand what his world is, what his world is like, and what were the influences that made him choose to do what he did to me that day.
Is he out? Is he in the real world, or did he get in trouble for this?
Connie, I'll tell you, I have some unconventional beliefs about justice. And mm-hmm. So actually, after it happened, I didn't report it. Because just in my frame, and this may be, you know, I go back and forth on whether this was the right thing to do or whether it was the wrong thing to do. But I guess when I looked at the A and B of, like, you know, him going to jail for a really serious felony, you know, with a gun, with a knife, all this stuff. I mean, he'd be going in for a long time, and versus what had happened to me, you know, which was just 3 hours of my life and $140. And I just couldn't see those two things equal to each other, the punishment to the crime. So I never did actually report it. So this, in a way, is also my method of kind of finding that justice, that I, you know, didn't want to go the conventional route, but maybe if I can talk to him and we can understand each other, if he's still around.
Well, if you can get to that point, make sure you have some bigger people on each side of you, or do it with the demons by you. That's scary. But I understand what you're saying. I get that. And that would be something very interesting to watch, without a doubt. Well, I want to ask you one more question here. And if you can describe what it's like to be stuck and you can't get out from your sleep. Is it like a Twilight Zone show?
You know, it's very, what is it like? Yeah, I mean, it feels like you're crazy. It's like if anybody's ever had a panic attack out there, you know what that feels like. It's kind of similar to that, because you're not thinking right at the same time. Like, the whole world is askew, and everything, the way you're perceiving everything, is askew. Something's like terribly wrong, but you're also awake and you're aware. And so that's terrifying, to be like kind of a prisoner of your mind. I would almost say it's like that, at the base of it. You know, not being able to move is terrible and everything, but to be locked in that, this sort of new reality for a period of time, which is really unpleasant, is horrible. And I think that that's kind of how I would describe it.
Well, Forrest, thank you very much for your stories. We really appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you. And we look forward to the future of what it is that you're going to show us, and certainly hope to hear more from you when it comes to sleep paralysis and maybe how to help other people's to get in and out of that and roll out of it, as you say. So everybody, if you can stick around, what we're going to do is we're going to be talking to Rodney Asher, the director of The Nightmare. That's where Forrest Borey was featured, and it's all about sleep paralysis. And we're going to find out more information on the film Sleep Paralysis and see how we're just going to learn a whole lot more about it, and hopefully that we can help you guys as well to know what you might be able to do or not do if you're suffering from that as well. So more here to come on Coast to Coast AM. Please stay with us. Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM. How are you doing? Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us. Sleep paralysis is the subject tonight. Actually, The Nightmare, the documentary, that's what it features. Touted by many different professionals and experts and friends and family that I know as well, going, wow, that is some scary stuff. It is. It's a great documentary, and it really does look through the eyes of 8 different people and what they experience with sleep paralysis. I want to remind you, for those of you that like to take pictures and video of some really interesting things that you know is very, very different, we're not talking orbs, we're not talking contrails. It's very hard to depict with those, but because we get a ton of those submissions. However, if you've got something else unique, really crazy, little, you know, really like, whoa, take a look at this, please make sure you go to coasttocoastam.com and you can submit your photo, your video, your image, whatever you have. But also, for those of you out there that like to, you know, do music, and, you know, I've heard Bigfoot songs, I've heard some really cool creepy things, a lot of great stuff, please know that you can do that too. We have our very own music submission page for you. So just go to coasttocoastam.com. You're going to find all the information there. Coming up next, we're going to be talking to the director of The Nightmare. That's Rodney Asher. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. However, I'm one of the guest hosts on the weekends. Connie Willis here, very happy to be here. And we're going to be talking with Rodney Asher, who is the director of the nightmare that we've been talking about tonight. Rodney, he's a filmmaker. His feature debut was the subjective documentary Room 237. If you got a chance to see that, it premiered at Sundance in 2012 before screening at festivals around the world. The micro-budgeted feature it created in a home studio, by the way. It was released by IFC and rated by Entertainment Weekly's Owen Gleiberman at the fourth best film of the year, as the fourth best film of the year, sorry. And at Fantastic Fest, he won the Best Director up for the Documentary Award. And the International Documentary Association gave him Best Editing Honors. His new film, that's what we've been talking about tonight, The Nightmare, it debuted at Sundance this year. It was called The Scariest Movie of the Decade, one of the scariest documentaries ever before released by Gravitas Ventures in the U.S. and in many other countries. I guess UK Guardian, if anybody knows Peter Bradshaw, he said the one film to watch this week. But I can also tell you it was very well put together. A lot of documentaries are just, you know, talking heads through and through. But he did a lot of really great reenactments and creations. And, I mean, he really went into the mind of these eight people that had dealings with sleep paralysis. And very interesting film work. And when you start looking at his other films, you really start getting into learning about Rodney and his mind too, and what he puts together. So it's very, I'm honored to be able to have him on the show tonight. And Rodney, how are you? Thank you. It's your first time being on, first time guest here with Coast to Coast. How are you? Happy New Year, and thank you for joining us tonight.
I'm happy to be here. Happy New Year to you, Connie. No, it's really exciting to me. I've, you know, listened to Coast for a long time, and I feel like Heather Langenkamp in Nightmare on Elm Street brewing coffee in the middle of the night.
That's right. It's a total visual. It's a total theater of the mind, and it's something that, you know, it's iconic as well to be here on this show too, and especially when you deserve it from doing something as really interesting as you have. I mean, the nightmare itself, you know, getting to watch that and go, wow, this is great. I got to talk to this guy. I got to be a part of this in some way. But then learning more about you, Rodney, and watching like Room 237, boy, did I learn a lot from you at that point. So it's hard to know where to start with you, but tell me about your film background and your paranormal background and how that has come together.
Well, sure. You know, my film background, you know, I went to school for it, you know, a long time ago now, maybe, you know, almost 20 years ago now. And, you know, I found myself, you know, working up the food chain, you know, in sort of conventional conventional films and TV commercials as a storyboard artist and doing camera work and things, while always trying to do my own work, sometimes with a partner, sometimes on my own, stuff that would be, you know, more personal, you know, and some of it was pretty off the wall. You know, we did a sock puppet retelling of the Henry Lee Lucas story. Though it was strange when I looked back at that recently that there's a scene in there where he was in prison, and this was, you know, best I could tell, a true story from our research. And, you know, in bed, he was visited by the ghost of his mother, you know, just like one of the women in The Nightmare was. Mm-hmm. You know, so I had to wonder, you know, 10, 15 plus years later, you know, if that story was actually inspired by sleep paralysis, you know, back in the day. And, you know, in my research for The Nightmare, you know, and kind of staying on the topic, you know, I've come across thing after thing that weren't necessarily identified as sleep paralysis at the time, but may well have been. You know, there's passages from Dracula and Moby Dick, or the inspiration of Frankenstein, you know, that all seem evocative, you know, of the sleep paralysis experience. So, you know, everything, you know, we may already be sprawling here on this first answer, but, you know, that's what happens when I start talking about these topics. But, you know, certainly I know my experience that once Room 237 came out, one coincidence sort of led to another. And, you know, every one of these projects finds themselves interconnected in very strange and interesting ways.
Well, and that's kind of your personality as well, from what, I mean, just what I've gathered from watching your work. Because, which film school did you go to? Where did you go for film?
It was the University of Miami in Coral Gables, Florida.
Okay. All right. Well, I went to University of Kentucky, but I had to kind of create my own way because I couldn't go to USC or anything. It was too far out of state to pay those prices. But I took a couple film critique classes, and we would take these films, and we would dissect scene after scene after scene. And that's basically what you did in Room 237. You dissected, like, all sorts of things, what was on the wall, the carpet on the floor. And it brought me back to the film classes. And I remember in the film classes going, oh, come on, just because he stood up at that point in the scene didn't mean that he was announcing to the world, you know, blah, 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 blah. And that's what, you know, you hear. That's one of these things where, you know, everything has a reason in every scene. Now, I don't think all films are shot like that, but watching your Room 237 did bring me into, wow, Stanley Kubrick, I guess he was that kind of guy that would do that. And for you to depict everything as you did in Room 237 about The Shining and Space Odyssey 2000 and, you know, all the different films that were in there, it made me realize, wow, there are directors, yes, that absolutely do that for every scene. And then I had to go back and watch The Nightmare again. Because I thought, I bet Rodney did the same thing. So I saw some unique things as well. And that was very interesting. So it is, you are that kind of director that notices and then reflects it. And I think we all appreciate that. And I think that's why you could get so emotional in the film. And you also, it appeared to me, that you listened to the people that told you their sleep paralysis, thoughts and feelings. And you listened, and then you sent it back out there as the messenger, as best you could to everybody. And I think also maybe because you've experienced it too.
Well, yeah, and absolutely. And, you know, both, you know, my interest in The Shining and my own personal sleep paralysis experience were very interesting to me, but I didn't need to look around that long to find out that there were other people who had, you know, gone deeper, you know, into each of those experiences, and that I was much better off listening to their story and, you know, taking the time to look at these things through these people's eyes than I was trying to present myself as an expert and explaining each of these things, you know, from my own limited perspective, you know, because, you know, there's always somebody smarter than you, at least there's always somebody smarter than me. And, you know, I was very excited to find people, you know, in both films, you know, who are so articulate and so passionate about, you know, these two topics.
And who is an expert in these things? It's really just listening to the people with the experiences, because you've got people on one side saying, no, it's not real, and you know, it's just hallucinations and things, and then you've got the people going through it going, no, this is killing me. So can you tell me about your experiences with sleep paralysis?
Well, sure, of sleep paralysis?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first one actually happened when I was in Florida, when I had just finished school. And, you know, as I have, you know, come to discover, you know, my experience, you know, although it was the most fantastical, you know, and terrifying thing that ever happened to me, is a pretty classical experience, not that similar to a lot of people. You know, but anyway, you know, I guess I was 21, maybe 22, and, you know, it was the middle of the night. It was about maybe 4 a.m., 3 a.m., and, you know, I was living in a house out in Coral Gables, Florida, and sort of beyond our backyard, you know, there was, you know, a big patch of woods, and I had, there was a glass, sort of a jalousy door and a glass and a big open window on the one end of my bedroom, kind of facing those woods. And, you know, I woke up and, you know, I was completely paralyzed, you know, from the eyeballs down, and I couldn't move a muscle. And, you know, I was very aware that there was something out in the woods, you know, and it was something bad. It was something that was, you know, at the time I was, you know, and still am fairly, just not a terribly religious guy, but, you know, this seemed like a not just a supernatural being, but an evil one in the, you know, in the religious sense of the word. And it was just very slowly and calmly walking out from the woods, you know, in a beeline, you know, straight to my bedroom. And I could sense that it was looking at me. And, you know, after a minute, it was in the room. And, you know, I based, you know, the shadow person in the nightmare, you know, from my memory of, you know, just a very jet black silhouette of a person, you know, a slender man, not to be confused with Slender Man, but
right, you know, right,
a slim silhouette, jet black silhouette of a man, but no hair or clothes or like fine detail kind of things. And it was very slowly walking towards me, very calmly. You know, it wasn't angry and it wasn't in a hurry. And, you know, I was trying as hard as I possibly could to move, to get up, to run, or to scream. I couldn't make a noise. And, you know, I lived in a house with three roommates, you know, and one of them was just, you know, 4 inches to the left of me on the other side of, you know, a layer of drywall. And I thought if I could, you know, pound on the wall or shout, then he could come help me. But, you know, I couldn't move a muscle. I couldn't make a noise. And my sense of what it was doing was that it was sort of like in judgment of me, you know, that it was considering what to do, you know, and whether I was worth, you know, choice A or choice B, and I didn't know which one was worse. And, you know, it leaned over me and its like face was just a couple inches away from me. And, you know, I don't even remember how it ended. It was at a certain point, you know, it was just sort of a fugue state. And I was at some point later able to kind of peel myself off of the bed. And it felt like, you know, like flypaper, you know, like it was holding me and sticking onto me. And I breathed heavy and I got up and I paced and I walked around and, you know, half hour later, other people were starting to get up and I didn't feel comfortable talking about it. So, you know, I just didn't say anything. And, you know, I think it was more than a year before I found out, you know, that there was a thing called sleep paralysis and that the symptoms, you know, were like what I had experienced. And if I hadn't kind of tripped over it, I'm not sure if it was in a textbook, you know, or where, you know, I wouldn't have begun to know, you know, how to research it.
When did it happen to you again, or did it?
It was a long time after, you know, it was 10 years, or, you know, it was before I made, it was around the time, it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago it happened again, and in that point, you know, I didn't see anything. But the strange thing was when I woke up, my cat was sitting on my chest, which is especially strange because there is a painting called The Nightmare by Henry Fuseli. It was made, I think, in the late 1700s, and you will see this painting again and again and again. And if you ever, you know, if you ever look up sleep paralysis on the internet or, you know, there are, you know, a half dozen books on the topic, and this painting is on the cover of at least two of them. It's a pretty famous sort of gothic,
absolutely,
painting. And like where that little guy is sitting on this woman's, it's a woman like kind of sprawled out, you know, on a couch or on a bed. And there's like a little gremlin kind of sitting on her chest and a horse poking his head through a curtain in the back. And so the weird thing about this experience was like when I woke up that my cat was sitting exactly where that little gremlin is.
Wow. I mean, that's crazy.
It is.
You had the whole thing, didn't you? You had it all happen to you.
Yeah, well, but, you know, that one wasn't nearly, you know, as chilling as the first one. And, you know, it actually happened once in the course of making the film, too. And it happened to me once in the course of making the nightmares.
Oh, it did. Oh, my gosh. They were back.
It came back, but it was very different. And it was very weird because, you were just talking to Forrest, and it was after talking to him, because he described seeing the film Communion, you know, based on a Whitley Strieber book, and how he recognized his experience, you know, in that film. I said to myself, there's a 90s era Christopher Walken alien abduction movie that I haven't seen. I need to check this out immediately. I was kind of surprised that I wasn't really familiar with it, because it's exactly the kind of movie that I would have wanted to have seen. A few days, I think, after I had spoken with him, I rented Communion, and I didn't start watching it until around midnight. So it was 2 or 3 by the time that, I went to bed, I've got a young son. So these days I find myself, getting up early and falling asleep early. So it was kind of special to be up to 3 a.m. watching a movie.
But hold that thought. We're going to be right back and we're going to hear about, watching a movie after midnight and what happens with it when it's something like Communion. Stay with us here with Rodney Asher and myself, Connie Willis, on Coast to Coast AM.